I'm assuming it's familiar. There've been times that you might think, if only I knew, if only I'd known, if only I'd known the lottery numbers for Saturday night, I would have put a ticket on. If only I'd known that bus was going to hit me, I wouldn't have stepped off the pavement. If only I knew it was going to rain, I would have put a jacket on. You know, so that kind of thing you think, at times you think, if only I'd known, then I would have done things differently. But before we really get into that, Alan, could you turn that down just? Okay, we're recording? Yep, okay, good. So, before I get into that, this talk came out, it's part of my If series, but also came out of a teaching that I prepared when Vivian was going out to Africa. I took the group for a few weeks, and I'd asked people, I thought, I'd got this book, which I'll show you, a cracking book. It was mentioned by someone who came to Encounter a few months ago, and it's really good. What it does is it goes through every book in the Bible, which you see, and it gives you like a kind of graphic overview of that book, which the key elements of the book, but it doesn't do the same thing for each book. So you can see every book is a different, it has a different approach, a different layout. Really, really interesting. So I'd asked the group, and Nikki had said, I'd really like to find out more about Hosea. I was like, all right, who the heck is Hosea? So not the most common book in the Bible, and if I can find it quickly, Jonah. So I got my book, and I thought, it's all right, because I've got this new book. So all I need to do, photocopy that page, we'll talk through it. It's brilliant. It's really great for preparing. So, flicked up the book. That wee column there is what it's got about Hosea. So I thought, all right, well, that's not going to be much good. So I'm going to have to do this myself. So, for the first time in my life, I had to go through and figure out Phyllis, it's not working. Can you step on for me? This is why. Was that me? Oh no, maybe we both clicked it. That seems to be working now. You fixed it, all done. Okay, so what happened to it? So I'll prepare. So try through this very brief recollection of what happened. So on the back of that, I decided, I went and spoke to Grace because I thought, this would be a really good theme for a house group. So that's what I'm doing, the house group I'm taking this year, is we're going to go through and look at different books in the Bible. And it will be, so the study will be like an overview of books of the Bible. We'll do different books. Initially, I thought about doing a book a week. I'm now thinking after the couple of weeks that we did, it'll probably be more than that, probably a few weeks to some of the books. But anyway, so... we're going to look at that. So the first wee bit I'm going to do, it gives background to what I'm going to say this morning, but it also lets you see what the content of that house group is going to be like. So if you're, because I know people are starting to think of which house group to go to, so it's just giving you a wee insight into what's going to happen in that house group. So what we did was stop. Thank you. I'll just put this down to save keeping doing that. You're in charge. So what I did was I went through, but using the idea of the book, I put together a visual presentation of what the book of Hosea is about. Because it's not, all joking aside, it's not a book or a person that I've really studied a lot or came across a lot in my Christian life. So I thought, right, let's see what this is really about. So this gives you a breakdown of what Hosea is about. What's the point? The overall theme is about salvation. And the way it breaks down, so we have a setting. So it's set 753 to 722 BC. And he is the first of the 12 minor prophets at the end of the Old Testament. His message is basically what the message he's passing on from God is about judgment for spiritual adultery. That's how it's summed up. The outline from it, so the outline of Hosea, chapters 1 to 3, is basically around the relationship between God and his people. And in order to show that, what God tells Hosea to do is to go and find an unfaithful woman and marry her. Every man's dream. So he goes and does that. Chapters 40-14 is full of all the warnings and promises that God's applying to an unfaithful nation. You then get some key verses. So in 4:6, you get, my people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge. In 11:1, out of Egypt I called my son. And 13:4, there is no savior besides me. And then to sum up the whole book, you have chapter 14, verses 1-3, there's a call to repentance. 14:48, there's a promise of redemption. Okay? And then there's a declaration in 14:9, let the wise understand. So that kind of gave us an overview of the book, and it gives you some of the background to what's happening. So this is in the northern kingdom in Israel, and Hosea is delivering this message to the people. Okay, so we're going to look at a specific part of that. What we did in the house group was we kind of looked at the overview of what was happening. Okay, Phyllis, can you step on to the next slide, mate? So a more detailed breakdown you can see there. I'm not going to through all this, but it's, you know, it breaks it down in a bit more detail. There's a bit of background to his family. There's a bit about his children's names. That goes on to all the what's happened with Israel, the relationship, the condemnation, the recall to repentance, etc. Then towards the end, starts to get a bit more cheery, and you've got a sermon about Jacob the deceiver. Then death is inevitable and exile is imminent. That's a pretty scary message to get. But followed immediately by the Lord's pledge to forgive those to return to him, and then it concludes with an exhortation. So it actually ends in a very positive note. So that's what we do in the house group, okay? So so you can see how when you actually break it down, although it's a small book in the Bible, when you actually break it down, you could probably spend a week in each of those sections in a house group. But don't worry, I'm not going to get through all that, so we want to focus on the next slide, Phyllis. So what we're going to look at is a particular aspect of the message that he's given to the people, which I think is very relevant and to the New Testament, to the life of Jesus, and to us today, which hopefully you'll see that as we go through. So we start off in chapter 2, verses 16-18. It says, it will come about in that day, declares the Lord, that you will call me Ishi, and I will no longer call me, and will no longer call me Baali. For I will remove the names of the Baals from her mouth, so that they will be mentioned by their names no more. In that day, I will also make a covenant for them with the beasts of the field, the birds of the sky, and the creeping things in the ground, and I will abolish the bow, the sword, and war from the land, and will make them lie down in safety. So the first thing is, just to clear up, because unusual words, so Ishi means husband, and Baali means master. So what he's saying is, you will no longer call me your master, you will call me your husband. So you get a reference there to what's coming up, because obviously this is what he's predicting for the people, is actually he's predicting the coming of Jesus and how things are going to change. That's the kind of essence behind it. So the first thing is a change in relationship. So they're no longer going to be a people with a master. They're going to be in a relationship that's like a marriage. And they're going to call him husband rather than master. So it's an incredible insight to what was coming if the people were willing to listen. So if they're going to listen, this is what's coming ahead of them. Hosea knew that the new covenant was coming. And I thought that was quite interesting, that phrase, because what does Jesus say at the Last Supper? This is the cup of the new covenant. And my blood. This is the same covenant that Hosea is talking about. So you've got a key link there to the Last Supper. So you can link that directly into the speech that Jesus made at the Last Supper, where he refers to that new covenant. And we are also in that position because a new covenant is coming for us, and that new covenant is going to be when Jesus returns, because we're getting nearer and nearer that time. So we're kind of in the same thing. We don't know how long it's going to be, And these people, he was talking to these people, in reality it was going to be over 700 years before this happened. But they were, but he knew it was coming. Same for us, we don't know what it's going to be. Could be next week, could be 700 years. Everybody will have their view on that, but that new covenant is coming. Okay, fellas. So then we go on to verses 19 and 20 of chapter 2. I will betroth you to me forever. Yes, I will betroth you to me in righteousness and in justice, in loving kindness and in compassion, and I will betroth you to me in faithfulness. Then you will know the Lord. So what can we take out of this? So this new covenant that God is talking about through Hosea is permanent. So there have been various covenants in the past through the Old Testament. Israel didn't always stick to them, let's say. But this was a covenant that had a much more of a permanency. And you see that in this, because it says, I will betroth you to me forever. So this is a lasting covenant that's coming. And it references through, you talk about the word betrothed, so that's referencing the marriage, which is the relationship that he referred to early on. It also speaks of loyalty and commitment, because that's what the marriage process is about. It's about loyalty and making that commitment. So through Jesus' life and sacrifice, God has made that commitment with us forever. So is that, I'll just put that question in there, so is that an alliance that cannot be broken? Right? We talk about the permanency of that, like when Jesus died for us, he died for everyone for all time. We talk about when you come to faith, that faith can't be taken away from you. There's a permanency to it, and therefore it's a covenant that cannot be broken. Previous to that, as say, people of Israel were regularly breaking their covenants and they had to come back to them and make a new covenant with them, but that wasn't going to happen anymore. Certainly not from God's side. Okay, fellas. So then on to chapter 6 and verse 1. We have come, let us return to the Lord, for he has torn us, but he will heal us. He has wounded us, but he will bandage us. So the call goes out to the people to make that move. This is the start of the call going to the people to say, listen, this is the situation. Things are not going great. You're not behaving yourself, but God's bringing a new covenant. And as we wait for that covenant to arrive, we need to start returning to him. And you can liken that to us now. We don't know when Jesus is coming back, but we need to start preparing for it. So he's telling them they need to turn from their disloyal ways. It says that they've been unfaithful. That's the whole point about Hosea marrying an unfaithful woman. The nation has been unfaithful, and God's had enough, and he's telling them, right, okay, I'm going to sort this out, but you need to return to me. You've been disloyal. You need to return to me. And if you think about that, it's that action. So although God's putting a covenant in place, he's telling the people it's them that have to take the action. They have to return to him. And when it says about bandage, so what it's meaning, the language there, it's talking about wrapping firmly. The two examples that it gave to try and understand the word was like a compress on a wound. Okay, so when you have a really serious wound, you put a compress on it, tie it down, it's like that, it's firm, that's not coming off, or a turban on a head. And if I'm sure you've all seen people with turbans in their head. What you don't often see is people with their turbans falling off their heads, because they know how to wrap them so that they don't come off. Right, so it's talking about that. That's kind of solid wrapping that God will put. So although we've been torn and wounded, he will put a wrapping on that won't come off. And also that call to return is ongoing. You can see that right through the Old Testament. You can see it in the New Testament and the message that Jesus brought us, that we are called continually by God to return to him. Moving on to verse 2, he will revive us after 2 days. So remember, this is Hosea talking to the people in the northern kingdom, okay? And he sent them, if they're willing to repent, to turn from their ways, return to God, that he will revive them after 2 days and then will raise them up on the third day. Sound familiar? Do we know somebody else that happened to? So it's an interesting link from, so what he's talking about to the people is that their salvation that he's telling them is coming from God, that they've been disloyal, that they've been going down the wrong road, they need to turn round, but if they do, God will raise them up. And it's, I just thought it was really interesting that the words that he used is 2 days, and then the third day you'll be risen. You know, exactly what happened to Jesus. So it's a promise from God that he will restore the people in the land if they return to him. So here's this if again, it's if they return. So it's not, he's not saying it will happen to them. He's saying it will happen if they return to him. So there's an onus on the people to take that choice and to make that move to return to God. Now when it says raise up, there's a whole load of words that can be translated as, but the four key ones for me that I picked out was accomplish, establish, ordain, and strengthen. And I likened that to, so I just started a new job a couple of weeks ago with Tesco. And I thought about going through the process. So what happened was that I went, applied for the job, got the interview. So the manager in Tesco then phoned me to tell me that I had the job. So I was established. So I was established in that post, okay? So then I went and said, right, you're available to come on Saturday for your training. So I went along Saturday for the training. And one of the first things they did was they gave me an employee number, which meant I was ordained, right? So I was now ordained as an employee. I was now part of the company, part of the family. You're like, that's how they tell it anyway. So then I had to do hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of online training, which strengthened me, because what it did was it gave me the knowledge and the skills to do that job and to work with the other members of the organisation. And then ultimately I was put out with a driver who then monitored me doing the job. Then a manager came out, supervised me, I was given my own delivery, took the van out, had to do everything myself. He monitored me. At the end of that, he signed it off, which showed that I was accomplished in doing that task, or carrying out that role. So that's an example of the process that we're talking about. So that's what God's saying. He's saying that if you return to him, then he will establish you. You'll become part of God's family. You'll be ordained. You'll take on the name of Christ, become part of that family. You'll be strengthened. So he will, you can't, even if you think you can't do things in your own strength, he will strengthen you. He'll enable you to do things. And then you will accomplish things. So as an example of the process, this is what the covenant is talking about. And this is the process that he's putting in place if we respond to him. Okay, Phyllis? Verse 3, so let us know, let us press on to know the Lord. His going forth is as certain as the dawn, and he will come to us like rain, like the spring rain watering the earth. I mean, the first part of that verse, I read a couple of times, and I thought, why does it say that? Why does it say, so let us know, let us press on? You know, so why does it say let us know twice? And as I looked into that, what it seemed to be is there's kind of two interpretations of know. So you can know someone. So you can know someone by name or by reputation, by experience, whatever. So there's knowing some. We know people, you think a lot of people around the world, I'm not going to pick anybody out, but just think around the world, around your life, around where you live. There are people that you know. You can say who they are, what they do, where they live. If they work, what do they work as? You can have a lot of information about them, so you can know who they are. So that's the first step. The second step is to actually know them. So that means being in a relationship. That means getting to the point where you have a commitment to building a relationship with that person, and you get to know them as a person. So you get to understand what they're about, how they work, things like that. So that's right. So it's first of all acknowledging who God is, and then second of all, committing to build that relationship to actually get to know your God. Phyllis? In verse 4 and 6, it says, "What shall I do with you, O Ephraim? What shall I do with you, O Judah? For your loyalty is like a morning cloud and like the dew which goes away early. For I delight in loyalty rather than sacrifice, and in the knowledge of God rather than burnt offerings." So God is looking for loyalty rather than sacrifice. And that was, I remember kind of coming across that for the first time years and years ago and being quite struck by that, because so much of the Old Testament is about sacrifice and the processes for sacrifice, and that's not actually what God is looking for. God is looking for loyalty. And it says he delights, so he's pleased with us. When we're loyal to him, he is pleased. You may be quite happy when we make sacrifices. Not so much now. I'm just wondering what Hugh's going to do with that the pigeon when he gets a hold of it. I can imagine him sacrificing. So there is the sacrifice, which was how the Old Testament was built around that process of sacrifice. And that was all wiped away when Jesus came. So he was the one sacrifice for all, which eliminated the sacrifice, because God wanted to get rid of that part. Because what God's interested in is the loyalty side, the relationship. So how loyal are we? That's what we need to be looking at. How loyal are we? Do we keep our word? Do our actions match our words? And you remember from way back in the early days of Cornerstone, one of the phrases that we spouted all the time was that, "Don't talk the talk, walk the walk." Do you remember it? I'm sure you will, a few of you, yeah. And some time ago, that started bugging me, that phrase. And what I sorted out in my head was that when you say don't talk the talk, walk the walk, what you're doing is saying don't talk. And I realised that was the bit that bugged me. And for me, I changed it to walk the talk, because it doesn't mean you don't have the talk, but the talk needs to turn into the walk. So I then started using that in my head with things and make sure that I'm walking the talk. Because we need to commit, we need to follow through in our commitments. If you commit to do something, then do it. If we say, if somebody says, let's go and do this, let's go out and chop all the doors in Cumbernauld, and everybody goes, yeah, let's do that, and then goes home and forgets about it. Right. So, you know, whatever it is, whatever level it's at, if it's a discussion in the house group, if it's a one-to-one discussion, if you agree to something in whatever form, then do it. Okay, so that's the commitment we're talking about. Okay, Phyllis? In verse 7, "But like Adam, they have transgressed the covenant. There they have dealt treacherously against me." So again, this is just going back, talking to the people, saying that they've transgressed the covenant, that which to means to deal deceitfully. So it's the same thing. It's the, you know, it's like signing up to the covenant, but then not actually applying it. You know, so do we say one thing and do another? Do our actions match our words? Covenants can be renewed. Sometimes, like Hosea talked about the new covenant, this was a completely new covenant that was going to come. But even looking back with the covenants that Israel had with God, they kept being renewed, but they were keeping being renewed because the people kept transgressing. And that is it's a direct sort of relationship to the covenant that God made through Jesus. In Luke 22:20, obviously Jesus says, "This is a new covenant in my blood." So it was a totally fresh covenant, completely different from the covenants that went before that had all the regulations and so on. It was just a completely new covenant. So it wasn't just a renewing of an agreement, but it was actually a whole new set of terms and conditions that were coming. Phyllis? In verse 6, "Therefore return to your God, observe kindness and justice, and wait for your God continually." So it's about turning back, and I thought this was key. So if you're already in covenant, we need to be keeping checking that covenant. Are we still sticking to the terms of that covenant? Are we still carrying out the promises that we made? Are we still carrying out the actions that we've started. And it's about a return, turning back. It talks about turning back. It talks about a retreat. So in other words, coming away from where you're going and going back to where you were or where you should be. So for us that are in a relationship, it's like we talk about back to that first love. It's taking things back. Things are a wee bit off track maybe. You need to take them back to where they were on track. If somebody doesn't know, is not in a relationship with God, then they need to go back to the place that they belong, because we all belong in that relationship. So we need to go back to that place. Then in chapter 14, verse 1, return, O Israel, to the Lord your God, for you have stumbled because of your iniquity. So to stumble, it means to waver because of your weaknesses or your failings. So as I said earlier on about God strengthening us, we don't have to do this in our own strength. God gives us the strength. If we try to do it in our own, we are weak and we will fail. But God will give us strength. And your iniquity is just your fault, your mischief, your sin. So just the things that cause us to go off the right path are the things that we need to avoid. So again, it's about getting back onto that right path. Phyllis? In verse 9 of 14, whoever is wise, let him understand these things. Whoever is discerning, let him know them. For the ways of the Lord are right, and the righteous will walk in them, but transgressors will stumble in them. So this is him starting to sum up, right, I've told you. I've told you what you're doing. I've told you what's going to happen. I've told you about God's new covenant. I've told you what God's offering you. I've told you you need to return to him. So now it's up to you. But it was interesting, those words. If you look at the end of the Old Testament, so the last thing it's said in the Old Testament, Malachi 4:5-6, the Lord's teaching will turn their hearts, otherwise they'll be struck with a curse. So, again, it's this choice thing. So God offers a covenant to us. He offers us all the good things in life. He offers us life itself. He offers us strength, encouragement. If we will turn, but it's always down to us to make that choice to turn to him. It was actually, when I was reading that, I was thinking about years ago, I still lived down in Kindorrit, and there was somebody come round the door, and they had a bag, and they were selling clothes pegs and things like that, and cloths, and they said, you want to buy this, and I started, and I went, no thanks, no interest, and they went, no, you need to buy this, and they were quite pushy. I was like, I don't want anything. And she went, I curse and you and all your family. And I went, aye, whatever, hen, and shut the door. I didn't really think about it at the time, but why did I respond that way? It's because if the Lord's teaching is in our hearts, the other way to read that is that you will not be struck with a curse. People can't curse you if the Lord's teaching is in your heart. So we get protection from God. You don't have to worry. If somebody wants to put a curse on you, fine, but just don't accept it, because we've got the Holy Spirit within us that protects us from that. If we look at the end of the New Testament, Revelation 22:18-21, let the thirsty come and drink. If you add to or remove from these words, God will add the plagues and remove life. So again, there's that kind of, although it's a warning, but it's the same principle. We have a choice whether we enter into that covenant with God. He's putting that covenant there for all. And we have a choice whether we pick that up or not, whether we run with it. And also it says, whoever. So back in verse 9, whoever is wise. So another way to write or read that whoever is if you are. So if you are wise, then you will understand. If you are discerning, then you will know. So again, it's about choice. So whoever will do this, whoever will means if you will, if you do. So if we are willing to discern, then we will know these things. And I was thinking about the voice, well, I call it the voice in my head, but just, you know, when you're in a relationship with God, there's just something in your spirit, something inside you that you know when things are right or not right. Maybe not all the time, because we're not perfect, but a lot of the time there's that sense of knowing. That's probably one of the strongest feelings that I have in my relationship with God, that there's that real strong sense of knowing in various situations. And that's what we get from that covenant, Phyllis. So to sum up, going back to where I started, if only I had known. And I thought, so, you know, we can look at all that, we can study it, we can talk about the implications of it, but what difference would it make? So if you knew, right, so if you knew, if only you knew that Jesus was returning tomorrow, what difference would it make to you today? Right, if you knew it was going to be another 40 years before he comes, what difference would that make to you? Probably not a lot today in the short term, but if you knew it was coming tomorrow, what difference would it make? But actually, it shouldn't make a difference. Whether it's tomorrow or 40 years' time or 400 years' time, it shouldn't make a difference because we should be in that covenant. We should be loyal to that covenant. We should be committed to it. Some of the commentary on Hosea is that the people were stuck in a time. So they were stuck in their environment, their habits, what was going on in that time. Hosea knew that a new time was coming, tried to warn them, but they were stuck in it. And they, you know, they were just stuck in their ways. And we need to look at that and say, well, am I stuck in my ways? So where's my covenant at with God? Am I actively committed to that and applying it and living through it? And or have I went a wee bit askew somewhere? Is there somewhere I need to like renew that covenant, recommit to it? Because we are stuck in our time. So the time that we are in is the time that we are stuck in. We can't jump to another time. We're here, we're now. So we need to make sure that our covenant with God is right. Okay, so I'm not going to close in prayer today. What I do is just kind of close with a wee challenge to think about. Just think about where you're at with your covenant with God. And if you need to relook at that, if you need to renew that covenant, if you don't feel as though you're actually in that covenant and you want to take up that covenant, then speak to somebody. I'm here at the end. A couple of other elders are here, deacons. So there's people that you can talk to. If you want to speak to somebody else, go and speak to somebody else. But if there's anything in you that makes you feel, you know, I don't think I'm in the right place with my covenant, then don't leave here without doing something about it. Speak to somebody. Okay? So. Okay, so Craig, if you want to come back up.